We'll move to questions without notice. Are there any questions? I give the call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates has revealed that of the 149 individuals the government has released from immigration detention, the minister has determined that 36 not be required to wear ankle bracelets. Minister, can you confirm that it is your position that none of these individuals pose a threat to the Australian community?
Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. As the Shadow Minister is aware, late last year the High Court overturned decades of precedent in its decision which required the release of a number of people who we sought to remain in immigration detention. And in response to that, we put in place, with the cooperation of members opposite, a range of laws and also put in place a range of processes to keep the community safe, which has been and will continue to be our number one objective, our number one priority. And of course, a big part of that was setting up Operation Aegis to bring together the government, law enforcement agencies around the country together. Now, we also have now four layers of protection, including stringent visa conditions, electronic monitoring and curfew arrangements, as well as preventative detention arrangements. In order to manage that, we put in place a community protection board so that the decisions around community safety can be made by those best placed to decide on the merits in any issue how to keep the community safe. I'm very pleased that the Community Protection Board is up and running and has been providing appropriate advice on managing this cohort.
Order. As the Minister concluded his answer, we'll move to the next question. Give the call to the honourable member for Hasluck.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How will Labor's tax cuts help Australians under pressure, and what is standing in the way of delivering cost of living relief to Australians?
Call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Hasluck for her question. I look forward to being back in Western Australia again next week when we will have the third cabinet meeting that we have had in Western Australia since we came to office, following on the last successful meeting that we had in Port Hedland in regional Western Australia. Well, on the 1st of July this year, every Australian taxpayer will get a tax cut under Labor's cost of living tax cuts. All 13.6 million of them, not just some, because we understand that we want to leave nobody behind. But we also want to make sure that people can aspire, which is why we have tax cuts right throughout each of the income tax thresholds, all the way through. And I must say that it's been well received out there. That is why we made this decision, because of cost of living pressures, particularly amongst low and middle income Australians. And these tax cuts are aimed squarely at middle Australia, squarely at those people who go to work, work hard to make a difference for themselves and their family, and deserve a reward. Mr. Speaker, we want Australians to earn more and to keep more of what they earn. Those opposite want people to work for longer for less. They want them on call 24 hours a day. They oppose every wage increase, and we know that they didn't want to pass on the Labor's tax cuts. They reluctantly have now said they're supporting it whilst they argue against it consistently all the way through. These things are so bad that they're going to vote for it. Well, we on this side of the chamber do not want Australians to work longer for less. What we want them to do is to earn more, which is why we've put in place measures such as the increase in the minimum wage, the support for aged care workers, the industrial relations legislation, and why we are putting in place Labor's cost of living tax cuts. And indeed, it's not just the beneficiaries who say that. Someone in my electorate, Fuak from Croydon Park, said this, wrote to me and said, "I think most Australians will see that what your government has done is to make the whole tax changes fairer and much more economically realistic. Peter Dutton will rant and rave and be as negative as possible.
Order.
You got that right. But this was the right decision. This is the right decision. Those opposite oppose higher wages. They vote against Help With Your Power Bill. They vote against cheaper medicines. Vote against affordable Order. Housing. Vote against penalty rates, of
Prime
course.
Minister's
now they want you to be bailable 24 hours a
day. Call to the Honourable Member for Warnham.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates revealed that of the 149 individuals the government has released from immigration detention, the Minister has determined that 36 not be required to wear ankle bracelets. How many of these individuals have committed an offence?
Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister again for his question. As I said a moment ago, one of the things that we have done to ensure that the community have been protected or will continue to be protected is to set up the Community Protection Board, a body composed, amongst others, of highly respected law enforcement officers. And I thank them for the important work that they are doing. As the Shadow Minister would be aware, a document has been tabled in Senate estimates detailing the conduct of those who were required to have been relieved who have breached their conditions.
Call to the Honourable Member for Lyons.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. Why are the Albanese Labor Government's cost of living tax cuts so important for responsible economic management, and how does that compare to other approaches?
Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Speaker, and thank you to the Member for Lyons for helping to ensure that every Australian taxpayer gets a tax cut, and 88% of workers in his local community will get a bigger tax cut to help with the cost of living. And thanks to the Member for inviting me to spend time with him and local steelworkers near Launceston. 92% of steelworkers now get a bigger tax cut. 98% of the Wardies I met with in Meadowbrook get a bigger tax cut. 97% of early educators in Carrum Downs get a bigger tax cut. 94% of plumbers and sprinkler fitters I met with in Bean Lee get a bigger tax cut. Mr. Speaker, as the Prime Minister said, more people working, more people earning more, more people keeping more of what they earn. That is responsible economic management. By getting the budget in better nick, we can invest in housing and skills and energy and roll out more help for more people, not just in Dixon and Dunkley or Farrow or Ford or Lyons or Leichhardt, but in every community and right up and down the income scale. And since we announced our changes, Mr. Speaker, those opposite have been tying themselves in knots over our changes. If they support our changes, why do they keep bagging them? And if they don't support them, why are they voting for our changes? Now, every once in a while, Mr. Speaker, we get a real insight. We get a real insight into what they think of our tax changes, like when the member for Farrow said they'd absolutely roll them back, Mr. Speaker, like when it was put to the member for Hume yesterday on Insiders that they were supporting our changes and he said, no, we're not. Like when he was asked on the Sunrise program if he wanted more support at the lower end and he said, no. I thought I'd misheard it, Mr. Speaker, so I checked his transcript and I discovered a very curious thing. The word no is missing from the transcript. The word no is missing from the transcript. The word that they utter most frequently is missing from his own transcript, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, because of our responsible economic management, we've delivered the first surplus in 15 years. Inflation is moderating. Wages are growing, and from the 1st of July, every Australian taxpayer gets a tax cut. And because of a decade of coalition disunity, dysfunction and disarray, those opposite are the party of higher quarterly inflation. They are the party of lower wages and harsher industrial relations. They are the party of higher taxes on middle Australia. They are the party of waste and rorts and bigger deficits and more debt. So, Mr. Speaker, I say to Australians tuning into the ABC tonight, if they thought that the Abbott and Turnbull and Morrison governments were bad, the leftovers of those governments are even worse.
Order. When the House comes to order, I'll hear from the member for Curtin.
This is a question for the Minister for Communications. Last year, a parliamentary inquiry recommended banning online gambling ads. During the year of that inquiry, big gambling companies made political donations of $600,000. You've spent 7 months meeting with powerful companies that make money from gambling ads. Today, new research was released, again showing the dangers of social media influencers promoting gambling to kids. Will you listen to the community and ban online gambling ads, or will you water down reform to serve your donors?
I'm just going to hear from the Leader of the House. I have some difficulty with the last part of that question. The Leader of the House.
Speaker, I simply ask that the last part of the question be considered as being out of order. Imputations of that nature have always been ruled out of order.
I'm just going to agree, unless the manager has another point of view, that the last part of the question not stand as part of the question, and remind all members around reflecting on members and imputations on members as well. The call to the Minister for Communications.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for her very important question. And I acknowledge her long-standing advocacy in this area, as well as many other members of this House. And like many Australians, the government is very concerned about the extent of gambling ads and their impacts, which is one of the reasons why we established the House of Representatives Inquiry into online gambling and the impacts on those experiencing gambling harms, led by our dear late friend Peter Murphy. Now, since receiving the committee's report, we have been consulting with key stakeholders on the committee's recommendations, and there's over 30 of them. My department has met with a broad range of stakeholders, including broadcasters, sporting codes, digital platforms, and I have met with a number of harm reduction advocates, public health experts, and academics. And I'm very grateful for their time and their insights, because their perspectives and expertise, particularly as the member notes the impact that online gambling is having on young people, the concerns over the saturation of gambling advertising, the close association even young children now have between wagering and live sport, and the shame and stigma felt by those experiencing gambling harm. I can say to the member that there is one underlying principle that is guiding us in our approach here, and that is harm minimisation. We are conducting this in a very thorough way. And to give three points going to that. Firstly, we want this response to be comprehensive. It's a broad-ranging report. It goes over a large number of areas that not only impact on the Commonwealth, but also states and territories where there are already existing laws as well. Secondly, we want to guard, member, against unintended consequences. And we know how important it is to take a comprehensive approach here. And you look at the last set of gambling ad restrictions that were put in place by the previous government in 2018. I say to the member, there was actually a 50% increase in the total volume of gambling spots on TV and radio, and there was an 86% increase on regional TV. So we need to ensure that what we are doing is guarding against those perverse outcomes. And lastly, for the benefit of the member in the House, the Prime Minister is running an orderly cabinet government. It is a collaborative approach that we are taking between a number of ministers, including Social Security, myself, the Minister for Health, and we are conducting this in a way that ensures that we meet our harm minimisation objectives. I would also just highlight for the member who may be interested in some of the other initiatives that are being done at the moment. There's a very important one that I'd like the member to be aware of, and that is the fact that we instigated the last piece of the regime for consumer protection, and that is BetStop, the National Self-Exclusion Register. Since April, there have been just under 16,000 registrations that remain active, and 47% of registrants are 30 years old or younger. And I just acknowledge that fact for the member to highlight the broad work we
give the call to the honourable member for Spence.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government. How is the Albanese government delivering better tax cuts to support workers across Australia, particularly those in the transport and construction industries?
Call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank the member for Spence very much for that question, and particularly for his ongoing support, not only just for members of his community, but his lifelong commitment to those in the transport sector. In the member's electorate alone, 74,000 taxpayers will receive an average tax cut of $1,207 from the 1st of July. We are delivering better tax cuts for the people of Spence, just as we are delivering better tax cuts for the transport and construction workers who are the backbone of this country and who are building our future. Hauling freight in regional Australia, driving road trains across the Nullarbor, building Western Sydney Airport, filling potholes on local roads and building affordable housing across the country. Those workers kept Australia moving during the pandemic and they underpin our economy today. That is why our tax cuts will deliver better benefits to them and their families. We know that 87% of taxpayers in Queensland will get a bigger tax cut under Labor's plan starting on the 1st of July. We know that 81% of taxpayers in Western Australia will get a bigger tax cut under Labor's plan, and 90% of taxpayers in Tasmania will get a bigger tax cut under our plan. Every taxpayer gets a tax cut, and the 90% in Tasmania get a bigger tax cut. Under our plan, every Australian taxpayer, 13.6 million Australian taxpayers, are receiving a tax cut on the 1st of July. A construction worker on $110,000 a year will get a tax cut of $249. A truckie earning $77,000 will get a tax cut of $1,604. An apprentice, our desperately needed apprentices on $53,000 a year, will receive a tax cut of $1,000. And of course, a worker earning $40,000 will get a tax cut of $654 compared to absolutely nothing under those opposite. An Australian on average income of $73,000 will get a tax cut of $1,504, which is $804 more than they were going to receive under those opposite. When asked, of course, we know what the opposition would do in relation to these tax cuts. We had the Deputy Leader of the Opposition saying, well, our position is to roll it back. That is absolutely our...
The Minister will pause. As the Minister concluded her answer? Has the Minister concluded her answer? I think I know what the member for remember, but I'll...
The Minister was not asked about alternatives and she should stick to the question she was asked.
The Minister was not asked about alternative proposals or any obstacles to delivering the tax cuts, so I'm going to ask her to return back to the question and not refer to the opposition.
Thank you very much. We, of course, want Australians to keep more of their own money. We know what those opposite would do, but we know what we're going to do. We're putting tax cuts in place to ensure that Australian tradies, Australian truckies, Australian construction workers, they earn more and they get to keep more of what they earn. That is Labor's plan. Those opposite stand on their own.
Order. Members on my right and my left will cease interjecting. I hear from the member for Wannon.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates has revealed that of the 149 individuals the government has released from immigration detention, the Minister has determined that 36 not be required to wear ankle bracelets. How many of these individuals have committed an offence?
Call to the Minister. Order. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thanks very much, Speaker. And I thank the Shadow Minister again for his question, but it's very difficult for anyone to accept the premise of that question. I say again that the government established the Community Protection Board to provide us with expert advice as to the conditions to those in the cohort. In terms of the other matters, which I believe his question is going to, these are, of course, operational matters. They are operational matters which fall within the remit of Operation Aegis, which, as he would be aware, is a joint AFP-ABF operation. All of these matters, if it's a breach of a federal offence, would be, of course, reported in the usual way by the AFP, and for those matters which are breaches of state and territory offences, similarly, they are a matter for those law enforcement authorities.
The call to the member for Jagga Jagga.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Health. How will Labor's cost of living tax cuts help Australia's healthcare workers? How will tax cuts build on the Albanese government's actions to make healthcare more affordable for all Australians? after a decade of neglect and cuts to our health system?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for Jagga Jagga for her question. She knows that 77,000 taxpayers in her electorate will benefit from legislation we've put before the parliament right now, debated again this afternoon, this evening, which will mean every single one of those taxpayers gets a tax cut on the 1st of July. Not some of them, as was the case under the old plan of 5 years ago, but every single one of them. And, Mr. Speaker, many of those work in healthcare, including the terrific Austin Hospital in Heidelberg in the members' electorate. A second-year nurse working at the Austin on $75,000 will receive, under Labor's plan, a tax cut of $1,554 a year, around double what they would have received under the old plan. A hospital orderly working at the Austin on $47,000 will receive a tax cut of $862 a year, compared to just $58 under the old plan. About $1 a week was what they were getting under the old plan from 5 years ago. This is all part of this government's commitment to ensure that middle Australia earns more and keeps more of what they earn. And Australia's hospital staff, Mr. Speaker, will also know that their work is going to be better funded and better supported by the historic agreement struck by the Prime Minister and National Cabinet in December last year. An extra $1.2 billion to strengthen Medicare even further, including more urgent care clinics, and a commitment to lift the Commonwealth's share of public hospital funding to 45%, Mr. Speaker. Billions more into our public hospitals from the Commonwealth than existing arrangements. Those hospital staff at the Austin and hospitals right around the country, Mr. Speaker, know what a struggle it has been to get that level of support. Every day at work, they see coming through their front door the consequences of 10 years of cuts and neglect to Medicare, cuts and neglect that were initiated by the Leader of the Opposition when he was the Health Minister. Now, compare and contrast, Mr. Speaker, this Prime Minister's historic agreement with National Cabinet in December with the Leader of the Opposition's first budget as Health Minister in 2014. Of course, everyone remembers he tried to abolish bulk billing altogether and tried to jack up medicines. They might not remember he also tried to cut $50 billion from hospitals. $50 billion in a
the
blue,
minister will
budget.
Pause. The minister will not refer to props or documents in his answer. He will resume his seat for a moment so I can hear from the Manager of Opposition Business.
Speaker, on relevance, the minister needs to stay within the terms of the question. Rather than engaging, as he always does, in an unspecified trawl through the records of the opposition.
The Leader of the House on the point of order.
Mr. Speaker, on direct relevance, given that the question asks the minister to talk about a decade of neglect and cuts to our healthcare system, how can he avoid talking about the Leader of the Opposition?
The minister was asked about a decade of decline, so I'm just going to make sure the document he's referring to is to do with that part of the question, not simply his opinion on the opposition.
I like speaking about the Super Bowl without mentioning Taylor Swift, Mr. Speaker. Not only did he cut $50 billion, he tore up agreements on preventative health. He tore up agreements on concessions
the
for pensioners.
For
Mr. Speaker, the staff at Austin know now they've got a government in Canberra that's committed to them earning more, keeping more of what they earn, and funding their hospitals fairly.
Yeah. Order. I give the call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates has revealed that of the 149 individuals the government has released from immigration detention, that includes 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders. The minister has determined that 36 not be required to wear ankle bracelets. How many of these individuals have committed an offence?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question, but I've already answered this question. I've already answered the question.
Give the call. Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. The Leader of the Opposition and others will just cease interjecting so I can hear from the member for right will cease interjecting. So can I hear the member for Canberra? Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. How is the Albanese Labor Government's closing loopholes legislation helping Australians earn more? How will Labor's cost of living tax cuts help them keep more of what they earn? And what has been the response?
Yeah. Give a call to the Minister for the Employment, Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member for Canberra for asking a question about the cost of living, because they're all coming from this side.
The member for Herbert will
the member for Canberra.
Order.
The member for Canberra, if I go through some of the public servants who are represented by the member for Canberra, and I hear the interjection of, when you mention public servants, the only servants those opposite don't like, the public servants. An APS grade 5 on $84,000 gets a $1,779 tax cut. That's what they get. Because we want people to earn more and keep more of what they earn, while those opposite want people to work longer for less. The closing loopholes legislation has now passed the Parliament, passed the Senate last week, passed the House today. And that means now for a whole lot of workers who have fallen outside of our system of minimum standards, this Parliament has decided that they should have minimum rates of pay. Someone who is delivering pizzas on the back of a bike should not be in a situation where their minimum rate of pay is zero, as though somehow they have a whole heap of negotiating power. And yet those opposite voted for that to be the case. Australia is not meant to be a country where you have to rely on tips to make ends meet. People should have minimum standards, and now they will, whether it's in the gig economy, whether it's in road transport, and also to provide job security for our casuals. Most casuals will want to remain casuals, and despite the fear campaigns, nothing changes for them. But for the small number of casuals who are wanting to transfer to secure employment, and where their hours already reflect what a secure job will be, why would you want to deny job security to them? Exactly. Their bills aren't casual, their mortgage isn't casual, their rent's not casual. If they've got dependents, supporting them isn't casual. If they want security of work, then this parliament should get behind them, and this government has. It should not be the case that you have to work 24/7. And when those opposite said over the weekend in that interview we'll keep quoting from the Shadow Treasurer, how did you describe their package of repeals on industrial relations? He said it would be targeted. And we know what that means. Targeted against wage rises, targeted against job security, targeted against safer workplaces, targeted against closing the gender pay gap.
Order. The member for Grey will cease interjecting. Give a call to the member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates has revealed that of the 149 individuals the government has released from immigration detention, that includes 7 murderers, 37 sex offenders and 16 domestic violence and stalking offenders, the Minister has determined that 36 not be required to wear ankle bracelets. How many of these individuals have committed an offence?
Call to the Minister for Immigration. Order. Members on my right, the member for Bowman is warned. The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister again for another question. What I think I need to make clear is that since the decision of the High Court in November of last year, which
the member for Deakin will leave the chamber under 94A.
A number which required the release of a number of people, we have set up a range of measures. And the Shadow Minister refers to evidence in the Senate estimates hearings today. Of course, that is the evidence. But let us go through what we have done, which is to take all of the steps to ensure that community safety is put in place through 4 layers of protection. And the thing that he seems to be missing in this is that we have now the Community Protection Board, which is providing expert advice to government on how to manage the—
Order. The Minister will pause. I'll hear from the Member for Wannan on a point of order.
Thanks, Speaker. It's relevance. The thing I'm missing is an answer, to a very simple question.
The Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, on the direct relevance rule, as it is, and as the member opposite knows from the time that he was on this side, it has always been the case that the question is whether or not the answer that's being given is relevant to the subject matter. It might not be the answer that the Shadow Minister wants. It might not be what he would have written had he been offering dictation, but that is not the question under the standing orders.
The member for McEwen will cease interjecting. We had this issue last week regarding yes, no and specifics. As the member knows, I can't direct the minister to answer the question that he would like to do, but I'm going to make sure he's being relevant, directly relevant to the question, and to provide the information as requested under the standing orders.
Thank you, Speaker. I was nearly finished. I mean, what the Shadow Minister needs to remember is that these are matters. I've already answered the first bit of his question. One critical element is for him to pay appropriate respect to the good work of the men and women on the Community Protection Board, the people best placed to provide advice to government on how to manage these very difficult issues.
Call to the honourable member for Gilmore.
My question is to the Deputy Prime Minister. How will the Albanese Labor Government's tax cuts benefit our Australian defence personnel, those at the Department of Defence and Australian defence industry, and what would be the impact of alternative approaches?
Call to the Minister for Order. The Leader of the Opposition. The Leader of the Opposition will cease interjecting, or he'll be warned, because time is not to interject before our Minister or Deputy Prime Minister answers the question. I give the call to the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for Defence.
Thank you, Mr Speaker, and can I thank the member for her question, acknowledge her service and her ongoing commitment to the men and women of the Royal Australian Navy and those working in defence industry based at HMS Albatross in her electorate. As we all know, every member of the Defence Force, every public servant in the Department of Defence, every person working in defence industry will receive a tax cut under Labor's tax plans, meaning that they take home more of what they earn, and that includes those who are right at the start of their defence journey, such as an Army private in the first few months of their basic training at Kapooka in Wagga, who will receive a tax cut of $1,089. Or indeed an able seaman in the member's own electorate working on helicopters at HMAS Albatross, who will receive a tax cut of more than $2,000. Or an Army private driving trucks at Pakapanyul near Seymour, who will receive a tax cut of $1,722. Or indeed an Air Force fitter and turner at RAF Base Williamtown in Newcastle, who will be receiving a tax cut of $1,463, which is more than twice the tax cut that person would have received under the policy of those opposite.
Member for Groom.
It has taken courage on the part of this Prime Minister, on the part of the Treasurer and this government, in bringing forward this tax package. And as has been made abundantly clear by the tactics of those opposite in this question time, it is now clear that they agree that this Prime Minister has made the right call, because if they didn't, they would be opposing the legislation in this parliament and doing as the Deputy Leader of the Opposition said they would do and roll this tax package back. But the truth is that those opposite don't have a tax policy. They are all at sea when it comes to tax policy. All they have is a tax grab. And we heard that again yesterday from the Shadow Treasurer, who claims that the Liberals will always be the party of lower taxes, only they are not. Because in modern times, the government in Australia, which has been the highest taxing government, is a Liberal government. And in actual fact, the Liberals now are a government of deficit budgets, of big debt and of make-believe money. The government, which is fighting on behalf of Australians in respect of dealing with cost of living pressures, the government which is prudently managing the economy, the government which is keeping Australians safe, is the Albanese Labor government.
Give the call to the honourable member for Fowler.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, it's heartening to see you change your mind on the statutory tax cuts and taking cost of living seriously. But families in Fowler living on a median wage of $521 a week are still under stress. Your government has collected almost $20 billion from fuel excise. Fuel has gone up from around $1.82 in March last year to $2.26 today. When will families in Western Sydney be given immediate relief through a fuel excise cut?
The call to the Prime Minister. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition is warned, and if she interjects one more time, she won't be here for the remainder of question time.
I thank the member for Fowler for her question and for her acknowledgement that Labor's cost of living tax cuts will provide tax relief for every single taxpayer in her electorate. Yeah. We'll do something more than that. It will provide more tax relief for 90% of taxpayers in Fowler. 90% will benefit. 98% of young taxpayers in Fowler will benefit. More than 90% of women in Fowler will benefit. We have found the best way to provide cost of living relief for people in her electorate and in every electorate around Australia by providing tax relief for all 13.6 million taxpayers. Now, we could have sat back and said, well, we acknowledge the fact that low and middle income earners are under pressure, but it's too difficult to do anything about it. That would have been the easy decision. What we didn't do was do that. What we did was make a difficult decision in the interests of Australian taxpayers, in the interests of middle-income Australians in particular, but also many of those in the member for Fowler's electorate will be amongst the 1.2 million Australians who will benefit from being either taken out completely from the Medicare levy or having their Medicare levy reduced as well. And I thank the member for Fowler for indicating her support for our tax package. It comes on top of our energy relief plan as well. I did notice yesterday the leader of the National Party there out there on morning TV saying, why don't they consider doing something about energy price relief?
Order.
That's
the
what he's saying.
Prime Minister will pause. Order. The Prime Minister will just pause so I can hear from the member for Fowler, and the leader of the Nationals will not interject while I hear from her.
Mr. Speaker, relevance. It's I ask for fuel excise and immediate relief through the fuel excise tax cut.
Yes, the question contained a reference to cost of living and tax cuts. The Prime Minister is answering the question. He's being directly relevant, and I'll refer to my earlier remarks regarding directly relevant answering questions, and he has the call.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. We found a much more effective way of providing cost of living relief every single week when taxpayers in your electorate get their pay packet. They will benefit not just from the tax relief, but from the fact that they're earning more. They're earning more as a result of the fact that real wages have increased in the last two quarters. We want people to earn more, and we want people to keep more of what they earn. That's our position. Those opposite in the Liberal and National Party want people to work longer for less.
The Treasurer will cease
but I am pleased and I congratulate. At least there's one person on that side of the House who can get a question about cost of living issues.
Call to the member for McEwen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing and Homelessness. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts help tradies building the new homes Australia needs? What has been the response to Labor's plan for tradies to keep more of what they earn?
Call to the Minister. Order. I haven't called the Minister. The Minister has the call. The Minister for Housing, the Minister for Homelessness, the Minister for Small Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the member for McEwen for that question. I know the member for McEwen has been a big supporter of our ambitious housing agenda in his own electorate and indeed around the country. And that's why, of course, every tradie paying tax in Australia will get a tax cut from 1 July under Labor's plan, Mr. Speaker. Every tax-paying tradie will get a tax cut. And for many, they'll get a bigger tax cut thanks to the Labor government. Labourers on an average taxable income of $57,000 will get a tax cut of $1,349, Mr. Speaker, over 700 more than under the previous plan. But it's not just labourers. 88% of them will get a bigger tax cut under our plan. But Sparkies, on average, with their average taxable income of $110,000, will get a tax cut of $2,262, Mr. Speaker, over $750 more than the previous plan. Indeed, 84% of electricians across the country will get a bigger tax cut because of Labor's plan. Carpenters, critical to the building industry, on average taxable incomes of $72,000, will get a tax cut of $1,563 on average, over $730 more than under the previous plan. Indeed, 94% of carpenters in this country will get a bigger tax cut under Labor's plan. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, a plumber on an average taxable income of $79,000 will get a tax cut of $1,730, over $750 more than under the previous plan. And, Mr. Speaker, 94% of plumbers in Australia that pay tax will get a bigger tax cut under our plan too. So 94% of plumbers better off, 94% of carpenters better off, 84% of electricians better off, and 88% of labourers better off. Mr. Speaker, this is a tax cut for every working Australian, all 13.6 million of them, and 76,000 of them in the member for McEwen's electorate, Mr. Speaker. But that's what responsible government is about. It's about listening to the people, making the tough but the right decisions to help people with the cost of living, Mr. Speaker, and it's in stark contrast to what those opposite are doing. Indeed, they're all over the place when it comes to tax cuts. They said they were going to fight them in this place. They said they were going to roll them back, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, they say they support the very tax cut.
Order. Members on my right. Members on my right will cease interjecting. The Minister for Infrastructure. Order. Ministers on my right on the front bench will cease interjecting, or they will be warned. The member for Riverina on a point of order.
Relevance. The member for McEwen's question was very tightly scripted. It did not include alternatives, and the minister should refer to the question she was asked.
You were correct on the first point, but this question contained what has been the response. So the minister, as I was listening carefully, was reading a direct quote about the changes that have been presented before the House. So I will not uphold the point of order. So the minister has...
Mr. Speaker, for tax cuts that they support, they appear very angry over there about these tax cuts. They either support them, Mr. Speaker, or they don't. But let's be honest, these tradies with their tax cuts are critical to building the houses that Australia needs. We know that the tradies are critical to this, and we want them to earn more and we want them to keep more of what they earn so they can get on and build the homes Australia needs.
Give the call to order. Members on my right, on my left. The member for Wannon has the call.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Can the minister confirm the 7 murderers and 37 sex offenders released from detention are all wearing ankle bracelets?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. And I can confirm, as I think I've made clear earlier, that the management of everyone in this cohort is determined by the professional men and women of the Community Safety Board, who have been providing evidence-based assessment on the application of those measures, the subject of laws that we all supported in this place to keep people safe.
I call to the honourable member for Cunningham.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Industry and Science. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts help Australian manufacturing workers, and are there any risks to Labor's plan?
Give the call to the Minister for Industry and Science.
Thanks, Speaker, and thanks to the member for the question, because the government, this government is one that believes in a future made in Australia, because manufacturing delivers great jobs, 900,000 plus jobs in this country, 85% of them full-time, and the bulk of them pay better than average weekly earnings. And under Labor's plans, particularly in terms of cost of living relief, and overall in terms of wage increases, we want those workers to earn more and keep more under what we are doing. So what does that mean in practice for manufacturing workers? If you look at a well-known employer in the member for Cunningham's electorate, BlueScope Steel, you can see an entry-level blast furnace operator, important job, a skilled profession at the heart of steelmaking. They make a base salary of around $59,000 a year. They're going to get a tax cut of $1,160. And if that worker goes on to gain experience and expertise and go up from entry-level operator to level 4 operator, their base salary jumps to around $86,000, and they'll get an even bigger tax cut, $1,840. And if you look at others in manufacturing, for example, workers at CSL across the country, from Parkville, Broadmeadows and over to North Sydney, who research and manufacture life-saving medicines, those workers on the lowest salaries covered in their current agreement, who make a base salary of around $69,000, they're going to enjoy more than $1,400 as a tax cut. And those on the highest salaries covered by the agreement, currently with a base salary of about $120,000, they're going to enjoy a $2,700 tax cut. Now, I thought there was semi-compelling viewing in Nemesis. And I don't mean any disrespect to the makers of the mockumentary, but the better thing to watch was their position on our tax cuts. It was way better viewing. And in fact, and at this point, we cue the Deputy Leader of the Opposition and Shadow Minister for Industry, who, when we offered a tax cut for manufacturing workers, said it was absolutely her position to roll back Labor's tax cuts if they win the election. And then the only thing that happened is that they rolled back her position and didn't go ahead with it. And so I'm really hoping there's room for a sequel for Nemesis, but if they won't do it, you've got to give us a blooper reel, and there's got to be a Susan section to Nemesis.
Order.
There's got to be.
The minister
section.
The minister will pause. He will not refer to members by their first name. He will refer to them by their correct titles. The minister will pause. The member for Riverina and the manager of opposition on the point of order. On a point
on
of order.
On relevance. Yep. Is well outside the terms of the question. It should be directed back to it.
The question contained risks to Labor's plan. Well,
the programs on particular television networks.
Order. The minister has 22 seconds. I'm going to remind him to refer to members by their title and refer back to the question and make sure his answer is relevant to risks to Labor's plans.
Thank you, Speaker. Absolutely. But it is important that manufacturing workers know that the Shadow Minister for Industry and the Deputy Leader doesn't back them getting tax cuts and was actively working to stop that until at some point they worked out their position and came to common sense.
The
on this side of the House, manufacturing workers know we've got their back.
Concluded. Call to the member for Griffith.
Question to the Prime Minister. Labor's refusal to phase out billions of dollars in property investor tax concessions to property investors like yourself is denying millions of renters the chance to buy a home. Prime Minister, noting that 75% of all Labor members in Parliament own investment properties, can you explain to the House why Labor supports big tax cuts for property investors like negative gearing that are hurting renters and first home buyers by allowing investors to outbid renters trying to buy a home?
The order. Just going to remind members about improper motives in questions as well. Just that was pretty close to the wind. The Prime Minister has the call.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure when he took that question to tactics, Senator McKim and Senator Faruqi with their developments were very upset with that question. But it goes to a policy Order. Question in that I noticed that the Greens political party, having held up funding for public housing last year, now want to hold up funding to support Help to Buy, for renters to get into home ownership. That's what they say they will do. Well, I'll give the member the big tip, which is that it stands on its own and on its merits. The idea that there will be a discussion with that sort of juvenile approach that we've seen from those opposite will not occur, because this is not a students' council. This is a parliament, and it's a parliament. It's a parliament that has a responsibility. That has a responsibility to look after the people who put us here, not to grandstand in a way. And the key to that is supply. And in supply, we've had, for example, our social housing accelerator is developing around 1,500 in New South Wales, 769 in Victoria, 600 in WA, 600 in Queensland, 230 in South Australia, 110 in Tasmania. Just that. The $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund will build 30,000 homes, something that those opposite held up.
The Prime Minister will pause. The member for Griffith on a point of order.
Point of order on relevant speaker. We're close to 2 minutes through this question, and the Prime Minister hasn't once mentioned the tax concessions that many people in this place benefit from.
Well, yes, but just in line with my previous rulings and my previous statements to the House, when you include a whole lot of information in the question and some extra preamble, the Prime Minister is going to deal with that question rather than just a short, sharp, one-sentence question.
Speaker, I mentioned the Green senators who benefit from these programs, as well as the Green members sitting next to the honourable member up there. We have a comprehensive plan. When it comes to renters, we had the largest increase in rental assistance in 30 years. But the key, of course, is supply. And maybe you can just have a word to the member for Brisbane, who is currently running a campaign against a plan by the Catholic Archdiocese to develop church lands into a retirement village for older people in his electorate. The member claims the proposal is too tall, would lead to a loss of neighbourhood character. And wait for this. Member there might be visitors to the aged care facility who increase local congestion.
Chief Government Whip. Order.
This includes 68 new three-bedroom dwellings and a four-storey retirement or residential care facility. The applicant predicts the Sacred Heart site will generate between 90 and 85 active and public transport trips. Mr Speaker, those opposite have never seen a new home being built that they supported, in the Greens political party.
Prime Minister's
the key to this is supply. We'll deliver on supply.
Concluded.
And I have a chat.
Order. The Prime Minister's time has concluded. The call to the honourable member for Werriwa.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is for the Minister for the National Disability Insurance Scheme. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts for every Australian taxpayer benefit those working in the disability sector? How is the government getting the NDIS back on track to deliver benefits for people with a disability and their loved ones and supporters?
Give the call to the Minister for the National Disability Insurance Scheme and the Minister for Services Australia.
One of the biggest groups amongst the 13.6 million Australian taxpayers who are going to benefit from Labor's tax cuts on the 1st of July are the hard-working people in the disability sector. The most recent numbers indicate there's about 398,000 people who work in the NDIS area. The vast majority, probably about 90%, earn less than $100,000. 79% of these disability workers are women, 40% are casuals, and 45% of the people who look after our Australians with severe disabilities are over 45. Now, the award wage for a disability support worker level 2, which is one of the most common occupation categories, these people earn $35 an hour. Thank goodness Labor got elected in 2022. They've had about 11.2% movement in their award wages, They earn about $63,000 a year, and because of Labor's bigger, better, fairer tax cuts, they're going to get $1,292 extra in the next year. Now, if you're a disability support worker level 4, which is about $44 an hour, you're going to get $2,000 approximately in lower taxes. So we're seeing that for the disability sector, the vast, vast majority of them, they're very lucky that Labor has developed the tax cut plan that we have.
Order.
The other group who I haven't mentioned so far are allied health professionals. Order. Many of the allied health professionals, especially in their early years, don't earn much more than $120,000 a year if they're lucky, but an occupational therapist who might have been working for several years in the NDIS, they're going to get over $3,000 in tax cuts. This is all very good news, but this is on top of the changes we're making to the NDIS generally. Now, I do acknowledge that the opposition's making the right noises about working with us to improve the performance of the NDIS. We look forward to bringing forward the first tranche of legislation in the autumn session. Our aim in the NDIS is to make sure that it's here to stay for future generations, to make sure that it is true to purpose and every dollar gets through to the people for whom it was designed. We want to make the NDIS a more humane experience. We want to make it an experience which is less bureaucratic, and we certainly want to evict the shonks from the industry. The NDIS was created to look after Australians with the most severe and permanent disabilities. What we're going to do by ensuring that it's true to purpose is, for the first time, help start building out what we call foundational services, working with my colleague, the Minister for Social Services. The Prime Minister and the Premiers had a real breakthrough where we got state governments to step up with us to provide services outside the NDIS. But one thing's for sure, if you're a disability support worker in Australia, the Labor tax cuts are the best way to go, and we thank you very much for your work for the disabled.
The order, the members on my left will. The member for O'Connor will cease interjecting. The member for Fadden, I'm trying to call the member for Wannon. Until there's complete silence, he won't get the call. The member for Wannon has the call.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Evidence in Senate estimates has revealed the Albanese government has released 7 murderers, 37 sex offenders, 16 domestic violence and stalking offenders, 13 serious drug offenders and 72 other violent criminals from immigration detention. So far, 18 of these criminals have been charged by state and territory police for new offences. Can the minister explain why he has failed to apply for a single community safety detention order?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration. Order. The member was heard in silence. So will the minister. Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question again. Now, it is worth restating, for his benefit and for all members, that the release of these individuals was required by the decision of the High Court in November last year, and would have been required under any government. Since then, we have been working around the clock to ensure the community is kept safe. We have done so through putting in place 4 layers of protection. One of which is, of course, the regime that was the subject of legislation that was put through the parliament at the end of last year that provided for preventative detention and ongoing supervision orders. Now, I'm sure the Shadow Minister, like the Leader of the Opposition, would be aware that this is modelled on the high-risk terror offender scheme. And he may well be aware that it took more than 3 years for the first continuing detention order application after that regime was enacted. More than 3 years. And 10 months was the shortest period of time for an application to be made to the court under members opposite, under the regime which he and other members, including the Leader of the Opposition, who was the minister responsible for putting in place the high-risk terror offender regime. So I think that we can see this question in that light, Speaker, and also through this light, and this is something that all members should be aware of, something that Senator Patterson pointed out. He said this, and I quote, there is a very high legal threshold to be met for a court to agree to the ongoing detention of an offender who continues to pose an unacceptable risk. This is exactly why we need to treat this with the caution and determined application it deserves.
Call to the honourable member for Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister for Youth. How do the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts benefit young Australians?
Give the call to the Minister for Early Childhood Education and the Minister for Youth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the wonderful member for Robertson for his question. It is indeed great to get a question about young people and about what the Australian government, the Albanese government, is doing for young Australians. Because, of course, Mr. Speaker, the Albanese government not only values the ideas and the experiences of young people, but we also listen to them. Right. And last year we undertook nationwide consultations with young Australians aged between 12 and 25. Those consultations provided us an opportunity to engage directly with young Australians on the issues that matter to them the most. We ran 58 consultations right across Australia. And you know what the young people told us? They very clearly told us that the number one issue for young Australians right now is cost of living. The number one issue. Now, as I said, Mr. Speaker, the Albanese government listens. Order. We listen to young people and we listen to our constituents. And that's why from July 1st we are delivering a tax cut for every working Australian, making a real difference to 13.6 million Australians. And, Mr. Speaker, that includes 1.5 million taxpayers aged between 18 and 24. They're going to get an average tax cut of $1,007 under our new tax plan. And for taxpayers aged between 25 and 29, that's 1.6 million taxpayers, they're going to receive an average tax cut of $1,573 under Labor's tax plan. So these tax cuts, they're good for young people, they're good for young Australians, they're good for middle Australia, and of course they're good for our economy too. As an example, a young person juggling part-time study and working in retail who earns $30,000 will receive a tax cut of $354 under Labor's plan. And that includes, and on top of that, another $172 from the changes to the Medicare levy. This is on top of the billions of dollars in cost of living relief that we're already delivering for young Australians, in cheaper medicines, in energy price relief, in boosting rent assistance, the biggest increase in 30 years, through increases to JobSeeker, Youth Allowance, AbStudy and AusStudy. The Albanese government has undertaken a course of reaching out to young people, involving them in consultations and listening to them, listening to the ways in which the policies that government makes affects them and what we can do better for them. We've heard their concerns and we're acting on them.
Minister's time has concluded. We call to the honourable member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Has the minister received any advice any of the 36 hardcore criminals released from detention not wearing ankle bracelets by this government has been charged with any offence?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. I do say again, though, that the release of these individuals was required by reason of a decision of the High Court, a decision that would be a decision that any government would have to comply with. I say again that the management of everyone in that cohort has been subject to the expert advice of the men and women of the Community Protection Board, and that is advice that we have been acted upon, a board composed of trusted law enforcement officials. As I've already answered, the operational matters to which the member's question goes to.
The member was talking about, the minister was talking about the issue in the question, so I'll listen to the Member for Wannon on a point of order.
It goes to relevance, Speaker. I wasn't asking the Minister about operational matters. I was asking whether any of them have been charged with any offence, and the public want to know the answers to these questions.
It's not an opportunity to add additional words to the question, but the Minister will need to be directly relevant to the question, and he was asked about numbers and how many, and also about the advice that he may or may not have received.
Sorry, Speaker, as I was going to the operational matters, which I was just about to touch on, which I believe I have already referred to, about the conduct of Operation Aegis, which goes through the manner in which that aspect of community protection is looked after through the work of the AFP and the ABF, who obviously are responsible insofar as it relates to breaches of Commonwealth conditions, and state and territory law enforcement officials who are responsible and who regularly update on those, who provide updates on those matters when they constitute breaches of those conditions or other offences.
Call to the member for Hawke.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Why is it important for Australia to keep telling the stories of Australia's prisoners of war as they do at the ex-prisoner of war museum in Ballarat?
The call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Hawke for his question. And yesterday, I had the great honour of being the first Prime Minister to attend the Australian Prisoner of War Memorial commemorations that occurred in Ballarat with the Minister for Infrastructure and Transport. It was the 20th anniversary of this extraordinary memorial. It tells of the sacrifice, courage and mateship of the men and women who served our country in war and who were incarcerated, were forced to endure such extraordinary deprivation, whether it be during the First World War, the Second World War, in various theatres where Australia has fought right up until the Korean War. This is an extraordinary memorial, and it tells a story that needs to continue to be told, because we need to continue to honour these great men and women who served our country and who suffered so much. Yeah, yeah. So many did not return home, but those who did returned home with scars that were long-lasting. There are only 10 former prisoners of war alive today, and there were around about 1,000 people there yesterday. Families and friends of those people who had served, paying tribute and honouring and showing respect for these Australians. The memorial is a record of patience, perseverance and indeed humour, and above all of hope. Hope that they may come home to their loved ones. I was reminded of one of the great privileges of my life. In 1987, I attended the opening of Hellfire Pass at Kanchanaburi in Thailand with my friend, my mentor, and indeed my father figure, Tommy Wren. Tommy Wren was captured on Timor. He was incarcerated in Changi. He served on the Burma Siam Railway, and then he was taken as a slave labourer to Japan, where he witnessed the second atomic bomb in Nagasaki. He came back not with any bitterness, but with hope for humanity and as a campaigner for peace for the rest of his life. During that visit, I had the great honour as well of catching a longboat down the River Kwai with Sir John Carrick, a hero of the Liberal Party and a mentor of John Howard, and a great Australian. These two great Australians from different sides of this chamber, who had total respect for each other, come from a generation which those of us have benefited who've come after. And we need to continue to show respect and to really pay tribute to them. On that visit, Sir Weary Dunlop as well, one of the greatest of Australians, was there as the leader of these fine men. These men, it was the last time they would have gathered, all of them who were there, I checked, have passed today. They wept, they hugged, They talked about their experience. As close as I was to Tom, like many former prisoners of war, this was the only time during that visit that he ever talked in detail about his experience in war. There was a time where people came up and told the experience of Tom was a big guy, fought for the Australian Heavyweight Championship. He stood between so many of the diggers there and the bayonets of the Japanese and saved lives, literally. He'd never spoken about it. So many of them did that. And yesterday was an opportunity to really pay tribute to these great Australians. And I think that all of us should be reminded that we live in this greatest country on earth because of the sacrifice of those who've come before us. Yeah. Lest we forget.
And on indulgence, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I join with the Prime Minister and thank him for his fine words. Associate the Coalition with the sentiment of the Prime Minister's remarks, and I would say to all Australians of our generation, our kids, our grandkids who are travelling around the world this very day, and they do so in the name of our country, as ambassadors for our country, visiting friends, family, backpacking, going to different causes around the world. I'd say to those Australians, in the run-up to this Anzac Day, think about including in your itinerary a visit to one of the war memorials or one of the Commonwealth graves. The sites around the country, it doesn't matter whether you're in Asia, in Europe, the way in which the Australian government over generations since the First World War has been able to establish those cemeteries, those most sacred places, which mark the sacrifice provided to Australia to keep us the great country that we are. Over 100,000 people perished in our country's name, and people this very day are out there defending our values and our way of life. So please take just an hour or so to go and visit what is an impeccably kept memorial to those men and women of the Australian Defence Force. And the reason that we can celebrate life today, the reason that as young teenagers you can move around the world freely, is because of the sacrifice that they made for our country. And to honour them in that way, not just between now and Anzac Day, but always. The Prime Minister and I have the great opportunity to, as does the Minister for Defence and our predecessors in that portfolio, commemorate the sacrifice on a regular basis that services here in Australia but abroad as well. And it is one of the most moving, touching things that you can do with your children to include on your itinerary as you travel overseas, just a moment to mark and to respect the sacrifice that those Australians made in our name.
Yeah. I call the Prime Minister.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I ask for the questions to be posted on the notice paper.